thank you for that. The forums and our kind of outline for the way that the forum is, there was a blind draw that took place, and we have our facilitator, Dan Jones, so I'm so grateful for him. We've pre-written some questions, and they really go, and I don't know that they're the most articulate written, but really get to the heart of what the workforce issues are in our community and what our business community has shared with us. And it has really gone to inform what our initiatives are. And you'll see a slide deck that's kind of rolling in the room, just talking about different programs and things that are coming up. The Sick as Emerging Leaders program was developed to help to engage our working population. And we heard a lot about population and things at yesterday's CETA's State of the Sitka Economy presentation, which will be able to be shared if you missed that. So we really appreciate that information. But getting people together to talk about workforce and to talk about careers and pathways in our community. We have a summit that's coming up at the UAS campus, and it's exciting to be over there. We've actually been over there using their internet the last few days, and it's really been neat to be in the campus. We also have a childcare initiative that the chamber is working, and that will be our topic for our fall forum, which starts in October. We have the dates on the slide, and we'll be sending out a lot of communications around that, but really understanding what's happening with childcare in Sitka, what is the history of it, where are we going with it? And so we've written a question around that, and then housing. Housing was the hot topic on yesterday's questions that followed the data. And I think, housing is important for our workforce. And so the CETA and the Chamber have partnered on a high density housing working group. And so if you're interested in participating in that, we're welcoming other folks to join us. And right now we're really looking for best practices and examples and some things that might work for our community. We're also participating on a citywide housing network. And those are kind of those top items. If you have additional questions, we've put papers on all of the tables. Write down your questions and then catch my eye. I'll come around a couple times before the forum is over and pick those up. We're slotted to be here till 1:30, but we don't have to be. But we want to really give that space for you all to bring your questions forward to our candidates. And we really appreciate both of you being here and taking the time to be here and talk to the chamber. So I'll turn it over to you, Dan.
Thank you, Rachel. Excuse me. So if you have these on the table, first of all, the only bit of levity today, in case any of you didn't know I was past chamber president, it was last century, so you're it's okay. We did, based upon the fact, when we have the assembly candidates, you're four or five of them, you got to really bite that time. It's really hard to make it work. But so I marked, and I told Leah and Stephen, they have 4 minutes for their opening statements. So the timer needs to know that. Speaking of the timer, I think that most of you know, Victoria will be timing for us. She has two jobs. One is a yellow card. When do they get that? 30 seconds ahead.
Okay. 30 minutes.
Start now.
No more levity. But you can do it, not me. Okay. Anyhow, and then her other job is the red card, which says, hush up. Now, we'll give you a little room if you need it, but basically we want to get through these first canned or prepared questions with time left so that the cards can be picked up and we can deal with what people in the audience want to hear from. So without further ado, the blind draw, way too polite, it's a Sitka kind of thing. Stephen won the draw. He gave Leah the chance to choose, and she chose that Stephen would go first with the opening statements. However, that gives her the opportunity to go first with the closing statements.
Last on the closing statement. I want to speak last.
You want to speak? Okay,
so. So then I guess you start. I she can go last too.
I'm fine with you starting and me going.
We'll
last.
Talk.
Dan doesn't always get it right, and but we know that Leah will go last on the closing statements, which we'll probably make into 2 minutes, because again, we have a little more time than if we had half a dozen people that hadn't talked. So without further ado, the opening statement is, of course, what you would like to make it, but you're somewhat prepared by us asking what should the business community know about your experience and how you will serve this integral part of our community if elected as mayor, and whichever one of you decide was you're the right one to go ahead and hit it.
I will welcome everybody. Thank you for coming today. Wish we could have got a few more people down here today. Everybody must be pretty busy. I remember when this room was packed full, both of the rooms. I guess I should introduce myself as well. I'm Steven Eisenbeiss, not yet retired, of a generation who may never retire, unfortunately, but we're working towards that. So what should the business community know about my experience and how I'll serve this part of our community? For better or for worse, I've been sitting on the assembly now for almost 10 years. I think that that has a lot of upsides. I think that that potentially has some concerns about term limits as well. And I would share some of those concerns. You know, term limits may be something that we look into in the future, but at this point, I am running for mayor again for one more seat, another two-year term. I think the business community should know that I am a business owner. I am one of you. We have Russell's, me and my wife have Russell's downtown Sitka. And this year we recently opened a new business here in town. It's called Trailhead Supply Company, and that's out at our cruise ship terminal. We opened that middle of the year, and it's doing okay. We'll figure that one out. But I am one of you. I am a business community. We've been doing this for quite some time, and intend to continue to do so. You know, it is my goal to grow old and die in Sitka. Sitka's in my heart. This is my home. This is where I want to be. So I'm going to continue to serve this, and I'm continue to make decisions for the long term, because they are going to affect me as I age here. I should probably start looking at some of those aging in place stuff, because while I am young, that is on the horizon as well. And we all know that the Sitka community is getting a little bit older. I think the integral part of the community, I think it is important for at least an assembly member to have some business experience. I think that helps the overall discussion as things go forward, because there's a perspective there. You know, we have right now Chris Yastad, who is a business owner as well in the fishing industry, and he brings a different perspective from that sort of business as well. So I think it's important to have not only people who work in businesses in town, but then business owners represented there. Really what I want to do is get to some of the questions from the people here. So I'll yield the rest of my time on this, and we'll see if we can get some questions from the crowd in a little bit.
Okay, my name is Leah Mason. I have lived in Sitka for 10 years, but I came here for the first time in a very random way. I was presenting at a conference in Arizona, and if you travel from Australia to America in January, you have to be prepared to spend a really significant amount of money. So I blew my entire professional development budget to get here for an EPA conference, and I decided that if I was going to spend all that money, I might as well see where my siblings were. And one of them happened to be in Sitka, and I had no idea what I was getting into. And when I saw the clapboard Orthodox church in the middle of town, I was going, what? and my sense, contrary to what the understanding is here, is when I was going from Tucson to Alaska, I was going, who goes to Alaska? How am I going to dress for Tucson and Alaska? What do I know about dressing, living, what's going on? So apparently everybody goes to Alaska if you're in America, and increasingly from other places. But having visited, Sitka was putting on a really, really cold turn, and my relatives took me up to Heart Lake to ice skate, and I thought, this is pretty cool. There's a Raptor Center, I could volunteer, there's family business to conduct, I'll come back. So I came back 11 months later, spent a month. August, it rained pretty much the whole time other than 3 days at the end. So I'm very much aware of what I was getting into. And after a couple of years, I decided that having been born in Arizona originally and spent many, many years trying to assimilate to the Australian context, I was never really going to fit in there. So it was become a Buddhist monk in the Blue Mountains in Sydney or come to Sitka, which was my happy place. I had determined after a couple of visits. And so knowing that Sitka was a small place and that the opportunities to fit in are kind of wild and interesting, I took the leap of faith and I just moved. So I figured that my background is diverse enough that I could find a spot for myself. And I think after 10, almost 11 years, I have identified several of them. I'm now working at Baranoff Island Housing Authority. And in terms of what I might bring to this situation, I too have been a business person. I've been a sole trader web designer in my time, and I did that for 17 years. I have also worked at a number of businesses in Sitka. So I've worked in the education sector, I've worked in the health sector, I've worked at Search and UAS. I've worked at UAA as well during COVID as a researcher at the Institute for Social and Economic Research. And I have been working for Baranoff Island Housing Authority for the last almost 3 years. So I think what I can bring to this position is a pretty diverse skill set, a good understanding of data, how to get it, how to interpret it, how to use it. And I think that over the last year we've seen the value of that. I've done a lot of work on research. Some of the work that my research institute has done has been on what we call small and medium enterprises, SMEs. So I have a quite broad view of what is good for business. And I too am interested in getting as many questions. So I will wind it up there. But I think business needs customers and somebody needs to represent the customers as well. So I think we need people who understand the position of not being in business as well in order to serve business, because business people are busy.
Leah, Steve, thank you. So now, some of you have the questions, some of you don't. 2 minutes now for these questions that are prepared by the chamber. This one's about leadership. The question is, what is your leadership style and how will this help you handle situations where there are multiple different points of view? Something we get into a lot. So now you will notice that since Stephen went first, Leah will go first this time, which means that she just got done talking, she has to start again. But that's the way it works when there are just two of them. So Leah, if you would please, on leadership.
Okay, my view on leadership is that leaders are more facilitators. Leaders need to know who's in the room and what they can contribute. In my opinion, at a community level, everybody who has a stake in the situation has a right to make a contribution to both understanding what the problem is, but also coming up with solutions. So I'm very broad and collaborative in that sense. Even if someone doesn't have the answer, they may have a really important part of the problem. And they may have part of the solution. And allowing them to speak that can actually allow everybody else to bring what they know to the table and to get a broader sense of what may be possible. Because everybody also brings resources. Knowledge, experience, expertise, history. I think, you know, what this town has at the moment, we talk about its aging population, but we have a lot of people who know how things have worked under different conditions in this town, and I think that's going to be super important as we go through the next 10 years. And so I really appreciated the former mayor Matt Hunter's approach to inviting people into the conversation at meetings, and I would like to emulate that style. That was how I would intend to preside at assembly meetings. And I am very much in favor of giving the knowledge of the community space in the conversation. So I would be very interested in engaging a lot more with the community in more open kinds of processes to be determined by staff and the rest of the assembly.
So my leadership style, there's been a couple things that I've always wanted to bring to the assembly meetings. I've wanted to bring a calm meeting. In years past, we've seen meetings that I think people would call it the popcorn hour. They'd sit down on their TV and just watch the assembly go back and forth. And I don't think that's effective, which is another thing I want to bring to the table. I want our meetings, I want there to be a purpose to them. I want them, the community, to know that when we meet, there is a reason for that, and that we are going to effectively get stuff done. I want to be efficient. I want to make a great use of not only the community's time, who shows up for the very end agenda item, but also efficient for the staff that has to come, efficient for the assembly who needs to be there. I want to be inclusive. Everybody has an opportunity to speak at the table. I know that there's been some concerns about the three minute mark, and that's in code. If you've noticed my style, I stop everybody at 3 minutes, whether I agree with what you're saying or not, and I don't have a choice on that. Code indicates that will be 3 minutes. So on my last point, I try and be fair. Everybody gets that 3 minutes because that's the fair thing to do. Someone can show a bias in who they let continue and who they don't let continue. So I want to bring that. In differing points of view, I first ran for mayor in 2020. There were a lot of differing points of view in the community, and they were very vocal. So I've been able to navigate that very well. We continue to have different points of view. I think the most, the closest one to us right now is cruise tourism. We've heard from both sides two sides that are very much split. So we have to continue to work together and in all of those manners that I said earlier in order to come up with a solution for that.
Stephen, you saw her handling her red thing and you stopped, so we're good. All right, so...
I can take instruction, too.
Very good. So the next question from Chamber again is childcare. The question is spelled out here. Childcare availability in Sitka is impacting our workforce at an alarming rate. How do you envision your role in supporting better access to childcare for our community? And they went first last time. Stevens starts right up again. He's first on childcare.
So childcare right now is something I'm intimately familiar with. I have a child who is in childcare right now. When we first found out my wife was pregnant, I got on the wait list, and it took us 26 months, I think, after he was born, in order to finally get a slot for him. So I definitely understand. He is in SJ. I've been working closely with Lolly on some of her concerns within the childcare system. And I also know that there's other groups who have been working on the childcare system, not only in Sitka, but Southeast and Alaska-wide. I wished that there was a different answer than the answer that continually comes up. But at this point, I don't really see any other way, and it's money. Unfortunately, childcare will need to be subsidized in order to continue at a rate that the community needs. Teachers don't get paid well enough to do the job that they do, and you can't charge enough tuition in order to pay those teachers, because then you wouldn't have anyone in schools either. We have plenty of capacity in Sitka. SJ, I believe, is licensed for 50 children, and there's something like 25 or 30 in there right now. And that's due to a lack of teachers. So we have facility sizes, but we just don't have those teachers that are there in order to help out with the children. We've also noticed our kindergarten class size dropping. So there's less and less kids that actually need the daycare right now than there have been in years past when we didn't have a capacity issue. So unfortunately, at this point, the only solution that I've seen that is reasonable is going to be subsidization. And I think that's a discussion for the community at large to have if they want to use some of the general fund monies to continue to or to start subsidizing childcare.
I don't have children, but I am aware of how childcare affects the workforce. I'm also aware how childcare and teaching payment affects the demographics of the town. So I think there is a broader picture to look at in terms of how we think about childcare. what are we organizing childcare for? So if what we're doing is we're trying to free up as many people to participate in the workforce, that gives you one set of solutions. And if what you're looking for is preparing children for school, that's another different set of solutions with different training requirements and different payment requirements. I'm not certain if this is being discussed in the circles that are discussing it, but again, if we go back to the past, we are looking at potentially licensing more people to take care of children in homes. That would free up people for workforce. It would also employ more people. However, if what you want is adequate preparation for schools, then you're looking at a very different situation. How we want to go about sorting out what works for us, again, needs to be bigger than the small group of people who are trying to solve it in their own ways, because the community, again, is going to be a critical group who will be involved in that process, one way or the other. Changing our demographics requires a change to the way we do things. Changing the way we handle childcare, we are about change. Business as usual is not going to solve these problems.
Leah, thank you. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, on to workforce housing. Now, those of you who were at yesterday's economic presentation, what got all the questions? Housing. So, this is an important topic. 2 minutes again, we're staying with 2 minutes. Workforce housing. In recent years, access to housing has become a top workforce issue. What do you see as the chief cause of the challenge? How do you propose to work with the array of organizations to address the issues? And let's see.
Me first.
You're first.
Okay.
Go for it.
Okay, this is going to be a very boring answer. It's going to come out a lot. It's a big, sophisticated system that's giving us these problems. You can look at the price of housing as being one of the big challenges that gives us this situation. People are purchasing houses and making changes such that they can pay their mortgage by renting it out at much higher costs during the tourism season. This has cascading effects on the whole thing. A lot of what we're dealing with in terms of inflation is based on housing and the cost of housing. So that affects everything we're dealing with as well. So there is a lot of very complex, very hard conversations that have to be had if we're going to make housing affordable and accessible. Because when you look at the details in the census data, you see that we do not have any argument for building additional housing. There is, the last time I looked at it, there was something like 700 vacant units. And that's because they take this data in March. And as we all know, that March, we don't have a vacancy problem. What we have in March is a long-term rental availability problem. And so as someone who works in housing and as who works preparing grants for more housing, I'm lucky that we're working with primarily a tribal group, and they tell us how many houses we need. And we need a substantial amount of housing for tribal members. But what we do have is a problem with the fact that we get more money for renting out houses on a short-term basis during summer, and it's enough money that people don't rent it out any longer. So that housing problem is getting worse. It has gotten worse since I got here. And it is not going to go away unless we have a hard conversation about the value of housing and who it serves.
So access to housing comes up at every single conference I go to, every single forum like this, and it is an issue not only in Sitka, it's an issue in all of Alaska, it's an issue all over America right now. So it is something that's worthy of us looking further into. The Assembly did recently authorize a substantial amount of money to study additional lands for opening up for housing development. The hardest part about that is I don't think affordable home ownership is a reality in Sitka anytime soon, just due to the cost of the bare materials, the cost of putting in infrastructure, and the cost of building that home. We studied No Name Mountain and determined it would be so incredibly expensive to put in basic utilities that the lot prices up there wouldn't pay off for anybody anymore. And I think that's the situation we're in with a lot of the available land right now. We do need to continue to work with other organizations. On a lobbying trip back in D.C., we sat down with the interim director of the Forest Service and talked about a plan to utilize a right-of-way on some Forest Service land in order to access state land up Indian River Valley. And he was extremely excited about this. Indian River Valley perhaps holds some potential for new housing development if we can get the state to agree. The governor's office has indicated that if there are lands that municipalities want, we should submit those requests. So we've gone down that path as well. We'll see if we can unlock, with Senator Stedman's help, some of that state land up there to continue to build housing. It's not going to be an easy one. It's not going to be inexpensive to fix, but I think the community has overwhelmingly said this is a priority. So I think the assembly needs to allocate some more funding towards that end state.
Thank you. Going on, ladies and gentlemen, to the visitor industry. Most of you have these. Am I spending too much time reading? Okay. Well, let me go ahead and read quick. With the recent growth in the visitor industry, new businesses have opened and significant private investments have been made. How does Sitka ensure economic opportunities continue to exist and lead us to prosperity in the future? And Stephen, you get to start.
Yeah, there's definitely visitor industry growth. What I thought was kind of eye-opening at the presentation, the economic summit yesterday, is that visitor industry jobs in Sitka haven't grown as much as I thought they had. It was a very marginal amount of visitor industry job growth. So that was interesting to me, because I, in my peer group, have a lot of friends who are attempting to capitalize on an opportunity that they see to stay in Sitka. They're using this this opportunity that's been presented from them to provide for their families so that they can stay in Sitka long term, as opposed to having to look outside. And I think that's one of the most telling things for my generation, is that we do see this as economic opportunities. Unfortunately, we've seen a slump in fishing right now. Indicators would say that fishing, the prices will rebound here shortly, but it's been a tough year. And so if we don't have tourism, if we don't have fishing, we're left with search as our main employer. And I know that there's feelings on both sides of that as well. So I definitely don't want to shrink our economy down to where we're reliant on sole sourcing. Towns such as Wrangell, who have limited sources of economic activity, are not doing as well as Sitka right now. So we need to make sure that with this growth, that we keep in mind that there are people who are trying to capitalize on this just so they can feed their families, just so they can stay in Sitka and hopefully prosper in the long term.
Okay, so I'm going to take this question backwards. How does Sitka ensure economic opportunities continue to exist and we prosper into the future? So I think what's important is to understand what we mean by prosper. And as I'm glad Stephen pointed this out, bringing in money from outside and the currency that circulates in our economy from that is something that people put a high level of a value on. But in reality, an economy sits in the central circle, and outside of that is a community. And outside of that is an environment. You cannot have an economy without a community. And a community is built on trust. You can't do trade without trust. You cannot do trade without the resources that our environment supports and provides. So you have to look at prosperity and doing well and where we all want to be in the long term within a framework that says that the environment we're in is important and so is the community. So where there is a community, there will always be resources circulating. You need services, I have skills, I can provide those services to you. You can provide me with a chicken if you have to, and I can eat that chicken, or I can trade it to somebody who eats chickens and gets something else I need. We have a very big barter economy in this town as well. We trade fish with each other. We do all sorts of things. An economy is not just external currency, and a community cannot be continued with a seasonal population, which is increasingly what we're seeing. And that is where Skagway is, and that is where a lot of communities who have taken on tourism in the way that we are looking to do have gone.
Thank you. And I will tell you ahead of time before we get to the questions from the audience, there are a lot of visitor industry questions for you, so
Okay. Keep
thinking about those. But meanwhile, excuse me, our last chamber prepared question is about collaboration, and Rachel has annotated that title for me to note that our chamber has over 250 members, so she's working on collaboration all the time.
Kat Herding. So
what would you like to see your local from your local chamber in terms of working positively and proactively with you and your office? How can organizations like the chamber be an asset to the new mayor?
Me first. Yep. Okay. I love collaboration. One of my favorite words, next to networking. I believe most problems can be solved by everybody talking to each other. So I think having an open line is fantastic, and having a networking system that allows us to know exactly what resources and skills and expertise and knowledge we've all bring to the situation, so that when anything comes up, we can say, okay, who knows about this? Who has resources that can be brought to bear on that? Okay, this is, how do we see this problem? What does it look like? And what are the skills and the expertise and the resources we bring to it? What does it say about how we can solve it? So very open and very cards on the table would be how I would like to work on something like that. The business community has resources that the rest of the community does not have. Starting a business requires capital already. It's not a way to survive. It's a way to do more than that. So I think that I would rely on the skill sets of business people, which are going to be different to the community, for what they are going to be good for. And I look forward to a collaborative process.
The chamber has ability to do things that the municipality can't or even shouldn't as well. I know a lot of times there is some confusion about that the city funds the chamber, which we do not. The chamber is an independent organization of business members, and I think that's important for those to be different so that the chamber can be a proactive group. I think the chamber can continue to work positively for businesses by going back to some of the business things that we used to see, downtown, the Moonlight Madness events, the sidewalk sales, the end of season celebrations. If we can get back to some of those, I think then the mayor's office and the city has a little bit of a role. We can help close streets, and we can help get information out, and we can continue to partner like that. One of the largest assets of the chamber is information. They're able to gather information from their membership that the city might not have the ability to do. So if we have a business question, we can reach out and talk to the chamber and see the temperature of its members. And that's very important for us as we move forward and make decisions, because they hold those keys and they are the representatives of the business community in town. So I think that's a key way to continue to collaborate, and just keeping an open line of communication. I think that's very, very important as we go forward as well, is just know that the chamber is a resource, that they are available, and if assembly members have questions writing ordinances, we know where to reach out to.
You should.
Yeah. Your fries are good.
So, ladies and gentlemen, we have an embarrassment of riches. Many, many questions from you. We're going to try to get to them all. We're going to make life more complicated for Victoria. It's going to be a minute and a half. Because we still have some time. It's not going to be 2 minutes, but it's going to be a minute and a half rather than, I think, the sheet says a minute. We're going to start I'll paraphrase a little bit, and I didn't even let Rachel decide what which one comes first, second, third. I just did that, so if there's any blame, give me a call. References how important the fishing industry is to Sitka, that it's the biggest industry, and asks two questions. How would you continue to support local fisheries, and what are your thoughts on city and borough support for the new haul out? And that makes you first.
I think so. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Fishing undoubtedly is the cornerstone of this community. It has been forever and will continue to be. You know, I think we looked at gold mining back in the 1920s, and that didn't pan out like it did in Juneau. But fishing has always been here, and I hope will always continue to be here, not only on the commercial side, but on the sport side as well. I think the ability to sport fish king salmon here is why a lot of people live in town. The city does contribute to commercial fishing and needs to continue to contribute to commercial fishing. We fund and maintain one of the largest harbor systems in the state. We are actively working on building a haul out for our fleet. We continue to invest and reinvest infrastructure dollars back into the commercial fishing fleet so that they can be here in Sitka, and then we can do deliveries here in Sitka as well. And I think that is massively important. Our fish processors, one of them has become the largest taxpayer in all of the municipality. So when we have a thriving fishing fleet, that comes back to Sitka in property tax in this instance, and dollars spent through the community. So I intend to continue to support our haul out project, I think is the big one right now, and continue to work to fund harbors so that we have a functioning harbor system here in Sitka.
I too agree that fishing is a cornerstone. It supplies people with actual food on their table, and I think that's an incredibly important role. As Stephen said, we have industry that puts money into the city coffers, and that's important to the city. But again, as I said earlier, we have a fish economy. People exchange fish, and that is part of a trust and a community building thing, which is incredibly important. And when you're outside of that fishing community, you don't really know what you're missing. So as someone who has two fishermen in the family, I get benefits that many of the people who are working at Search and who are coming from outside and who don't have networks within the community aren't getting the value of that. So I am also very supportive of the haul out. I think the haul out, if well managed, could be both an asset economically but also a huge boost to the fishing fleet that is here. I think there's a lot more that we can do in terms of making that fishing fleet ready for a new age, when price of fuel makes it almost impossible to fish the way we know we have. But history tells us we can do it in other ways.
So, and you'll find that I'm going to paraphrase a little bit from your cards, and I hope you will find that acceptable. So this, the topic here is the current police department facility, and the question is, do you support an effort to get a new police department building, and what do you understand about the current situation and the necessity for that? And this points out that it probably needs to move away from the courthouse, but that's maybe something you can consider. So the questions again, because I'm stalling, because this she didn't have theirs written down, neither of them did, so give me a couple more seconds. Are you aware of the situation about the police department facility? What effort will you put into it, into trying to replace it? And that's it.
Okay.
You got it.
I know glancingly that the police department is interested in a new facility. I do not know the details, whether it represents a risk to personnel. That has not become apparent to me in the public domain. I know that there are many, many issues to do with policing in Sitka, and I believe that there is probably a good conversation to have about what it is we need a new police building for. and that would be worth having a conversation about. So having worked in the behavioral health area and also in housing for tribal citizens and in the general community, working with people who are not white and middle class, I have a view that we have a very much larger mental health community, social services community, group of workers than we do as police people. We attract mental health and social services people in greater numbers than we do police. I'm wondering if we have a greater task for the social services and mental health community and whether that needs to be incorporated into any new facility.
So the police department building is not the best building that we have in Sitka right now. We recently had to allocate, it was $30,000 or $60,000 just to patch the roof to make sure that it doesn't leak into the building. The state in the past has been a partner in that building. They're supposed to be a partner, but it's been a little bit difficult to get them to want to pony up for some of the needed repairs and maintenance as well. So I see the need for the building. We continue to advocate for it at the state level. We continue to advocate for it back at the federal level. Unfortunately, we have not found that pot of money yet in order to replace this building. Perhaps during this time of infrastructure funds, we can continue to look down that path and see what we can do. It was mentioned about the courthouse and the police department separating. I believe that is sort of Senator Stedman's plan at this point, is to relocate the courthouse to the old Stratton Library. So we'll see if that does alleviate some of that. But ultimately, then we still have a building with an empty courthouse, a former courthouse that still needs a lot of repair. So it's going to take some time, energy, and effort. And if that's the community or the direction the community wants to head down, I'm happy to lead them down that path.
Thank you, you too. So I'm going to interlace two. They're both the same topic, but they're a little bit. So I'll see what I can do here. This one notes that cruise tourism is a significant driver of the economy and a key source of sales tax revenue. This one says Lincoln Street closures were the short-term solution to the fact that we don't have enough sidewalk and we need more restrooms downtown. And then, so the question for the two speakers now, do you support the recent proposed ballot initiatives to cap cruise ship passengers? And if not, how will you retain small town qualities? If you do support the cap, how do you justify opposing the tourism? And what other economic strategies do you propose if we lose some revenue by virtue of that stance? Well, good luck to you. I can't do it. Stephen, you were last, so now you're...
How many questions were in there?
Seven.
There were a lot of questions in there. They're
all right, so basically talk about tourism, right? I think something that is important to me that I heard on that one is the Lincoln Street remodel, the Lincoln Street redoing that. I've tried to keep myself a little bit separated from that one because I feel it to be important, but also I have a stake in that. The building that I rent is on Lincoln Street right now. So while I want to contribute ideas, I, as mayor, have not pushed that because of that conflict there. But I think it does give us an opportunity to widen sidewalks and to make a correct downtown for the level of visitation we have, that we don't need to close the sidewalks anymore. I've seen ideas that maintain the amount of parking, widen our sidewalks, and allow people to drive continuously. I don't know that we'll stop the jaywalking. I think that's probably going to be just as bad on Lincoln Street as it is on Harbor Drive right now. But I'm excited about a Lincoln Street remodel, and that's been in the books for a little bit. I do not personally support a ballot measure to cap tourism right now. The more that I've thought about this, I've realized that I have a fiduciary duty to the city. And if I was to put that ballot on there and then get sued, I think I'm in question of my fiduciary duty to the city. I've also realized that industry, and I'm not talking cruise industry, but I think local businesses that are a member of the chamber would sue. So that's an issue to me.
So I have said publicly in the Raven Radio Election Hub that I would support putting an ordinance to the people. We talk a lot about people having had their say. They have not. They have not been allowed to have their say. When the city decided that putting a plastic bag fee was too much of a hot potato, they forced the community to put up a ballot themselves, get the signatures, and put it on the ballot. And that's what we did. That is how you work with the community. You don't stop an ordinance from being gotten up, particularly when there is a precedent-setting case going on, which is very, very relevant to the situation we face now. That ruling has been challenged and has been defeated. So I think we need to also be aware that we cannot just sell our community and its quality of life to whoever passes by without giving the community a chance to say something about it. With respect to the Lincoln Street closures, my view about that is we've done it because we don't want Mad Sitkins mowing down the visitors. And having been a bus passenger for many years as the previous level of cruise tourism came through, I know that the bus drivers absolutely wanted to mow down the tourists. So I think that the community has been largely pushed out of this conversation, and it's time that they did. And they can vote as to whether they want to take on that challenge.
Thank you. I probably should have given you these 2 minutes, or maybe 19 minutes for this one, but you know, we appreciate your efforts. This card recognizes that at the presentation yesterday on the economy that social services employment is actually declining in Sitka, but probably the need is not. And it talks specifically about the proposed community garden as a type of community service we need. So they want to know, will you as mayor support the Jarvis Community Garden Project and other garden developments? So yeah.
I absolutely support the development of community gardens, a network of community gardens, because community gardens work when people can walk to them. So the current garden is a test, and it's a test of something that will provide a reasonable amount of increased food security in Sitka because of its size. I would be in favor of supporting community members in whatever way is possible to developing their own proposals for areas in their neighborhood and adding to that capacity to feed ourselves increasingly as we go along, and to working with organizations that want to potentially donate land of their own, some private land, but also to looking to where city land can be devoted to this particular thing, because we need to avoid situations as we saw in COVID where somebody down the logistics chain is not providing. We are at the end of that chain, and we are not going to do well if that situation becomes more difficult. So I am very much in favor, and I'd like to see more.
So I want to start by apologizing on this one. And that's because right now the municipality is overwhelmed with its workload. We are down on staffing, and we are not following through with things as quickly as we may have liked. So this community garden permitting process and RFP has taken a little bit longer than some of you would probably hope for. So for that, I apologize. But I am in support of a community garden. I think it's a great idea. I probably wouldn't have a plot there because I don't know how to grow. However, if I was around a bunch of people that did, maybe I can learn a new skill, right? I think that's a great thing. Anything we can do to bring ourselves together is a good thing. And I think this is low risk, low cost for the municipality with high rewards and high returns for the community at large.
Thank you. Okay. I had one, now I have two. Let me just double check. Anybody else holding a card? We really have time, although, you know, people have other things to do too. eeny, meeny, miny, moe. Which one of these goes first? One of you candidates brought up the idea of term limits. So let's talk about term limits. Still a minute and a half. What would you feel would be a fair term limit for mayor and a fair term limit for assembly person? And Stephen, you get it first.
Yeah, I don't know if I have that number in my head right now, but I think it is something to consider. I also feel that age should play into it, but I know that that's extremely tricky. Someone who's 85 maybe shouldn't have 20 years left on their ability, but someone who's 19 maybe. It's a weird question because I understand the historical knowledge that someone who's served a long time brings, and I also understand the ability that someone who's served a long time brings. It's taken me up until the last like 3 or 4 years to become very good at lobbying at the federal and state level, and I think some of those efforts have been seen, a lot of those efforts have been seen back locally. The 247 hydropower incentive, we wouldn't have gotten without effective lobbying at the state or federal level. So someone with tenure brings a lot of knowledge and experience. However, I think at some point they should probably not serve forever. I don't want this to be a lifetime opportunity. But that's also in the hands of the voters. So the voters would decide whether someone has had too long of a tenure or if they're able to continue.
I like the Swiss model. The Swiss do a lot of really interesting things electorally. And one of those things is they kind of force everybody into public service. And I think that it would be really valuable for everybody to take a turn in making decisions for others. I think it's a really important skill set to develop, and it changes your perspective. That said, I'd prefer that everybody was able to take part in government to making their own decisions all the time. I'm a participatory democracy person. I think that you run the risk with very long-term limits of entrenching particular ways of doing things that will increasingly favor the people who are in charge. I think that's something it will find very difficult to avoid. So I think if you can't do what you want, what you need to do, what you said you would do within the term that you have applied for, you need to be held accountable. I think if you can't do it within 2 terms, you need to be held accountable. I don't believe in career politicianing.
So now, somebody very important gave me this last question, but nonetheless, I'm going to manhandle it a little bit. We're going to actually go into closing statements. Like the opening statements, we had said 2 and we gave them 4. We said 1 for closing statements.
So we're going to say 4.
So there's plenty of time, and so we're going to toss this little bit in here. The closing statement says, down here, what would your service as the mayor mean for the community? Here's the ringer. If elected, what would be your first plan of action or step of action? So, and you two worked out who went first and second. I don't remember.
Stephen's first.
Stephen, you need to have that again?
That was a rather quick.
I think that's what we said, though, too. Okay.
Yeah, no, we're good.
Hit it, Stephen. You have 4 minutes if you want.
Closing statement, and what would we do right away? So first, I want to thank Leah for stepping up to the plate here. I don't think it's easy to run for mayor, but I genuinely believe that the community of Sitka needs to have a choice. So as the time went forward and it appeared that there was no opposition coming forward, I was actually concerned about that. While I believe in my ability to continue to do the job, and I believe in the community's desire for me to continue to do the job, that's why I put my name back in, Sitka needs a choice. That's actually what got me into this in the very beginning. There were 2 people running for 2 seats, and I decided that wasn't fair. So I threw my name in the hat, and that started everything quite some time ago. Electing me as mayor would mean a continuation of the level of service from our assembly that you've seen. I value our current assembly. I think my leadership has built an assembly that is working well for the community right now. And so electing me is going to mean more of the same, listening to the differing points of views. I've actually worked really well with Scotty Saleen now that I understand what Scotty's looking for, and we can work with him and get everything going forward there. So you're gonna see more of that, and that's something that I pride myself on, and that I think that the community values at this point. I think that the community wants to continue to head down the direction that we are as a whole, and that we should continue to do as such. However, if that's not what the community desires, I'm happy to go spend some more time with my kid as well. I thank them for the opportunity to do this. I thank you for the opportunity to represent you and continue to do good things, not only at the local level, but at the state level and the federal level as well, which I think is important. The first thing that I would do as mayor, and I feel that it to be very important, I want to continue to help onboard our potential new municipal attorney. That's a very important role, and I think it's someone with tenure, has some knowledge and ability to pass on to that role. So I think that's very important to get that person onboarded. Other than that, continue to deal with the plethora of issues that come forward with us. We've got a lot of prosperity to manage right now, and I'm excited to help us manage this prosperity as we go forward. So thank you, Chamber, for this opportunity, and hopefully our answers gave you a little bit more insight into who we are as people and what we can help the community accomplish.
Hey, thank you, Stephen, for recognizing that it is important to give the community choices. That is exactly why I have run. And as I probably said in my statement, I am interested in working with more of the community to develop ideas about where our problems are and what our solutions can be, and to work within the resources that we have here. That's something that comes up frequently on the assembly. And I am all for grants, but I am also all for recognizing the resources we have at our own disposal and how working together can actually come up with a solution and an understanding of the problem that actually is very precise about what we need. What my intention would be, first thing would be to get a really good handle on how we can support the city in increasing its capacity to do more. The city at the moment has a strategic plan and a comprehensive plan that talks about convening the community to resolve and to work on problems. And I think at the moment we don't have the capacity to do that very effectively. I think the community has been pulling a huge amount of weight, and that it should be given recognition for that, and more of a role as things go on, a more explicit role to do what it's being doing. I have a lot of time as someone who doesn't have children. I do a lot of work with volunteer organizations, and if you're interested in what I do in the community already, you can take a look at the Raven Radio Community Hub, and you can see the gigantic list of things I'm already doing. I will have to give some of that up to work in this particular way, but I look forward to doing that, and I would be excited about working with everybody to develop a sense of where we want to be in the next 15 years and to do everything I can in the next two to take us there. So thank you, everybody, for being here, showing your interest, and happy election period.
And so let us thank the candidates by giving them a round of applause.